Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into a special podcast edition of Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday. We are preempted this evening because of NFL pregame with the Titans hosting the Buffalo Bills on Monday Night Football. Lots of tables being destroyed over across the river at Nissan Stadium today. Hopefully Joe Rexrode hasn't been destroying any chairs lately. And in the spirit of that, I bring in Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode's co-host on Robbie and Rexrode on these very airwaves on 102.5 The Game. Robbie, has Joe broken any chairs since last Thursday morning's blunder?
Not that I can tell, although once you break one, I feel like if he broke another one, he probably would keep it to himself. So there's really no accountability that goes along with it at this point. I'm going to guess no, but that probably changes sometime in the next week or so, would be my guess.
You know, I went to Walmart yesterday, and there were no folding tables.
I can imagine so.
So Bills fans have already invaded Middle Tennessee.
The wake of unconscious bodies on the way to Nissan Stadium.
Not only have they invaded Broadway, but they've been invading Walmarts and getting all the folding tables because obviously you can't bring them on the airplane. So
doesn't fit as a carry-on.
No, it doesn't. And that would be a pretty large checked bag if you're checking a folding table. But we're not here to talk about the Titans and the Bills. We're here to talk about the Nashville Predators. And Robbie, they are two games in. They are 0-2. And I'm not necessarily discouraged by the result in the loss column for them. I mean, they've lost 2 one-goal games. They lost 4-3 to Seattle and then 3-2 Saturday night at home against the Carolina Hurricanes. I'm more discouraged by the eye test when watching this Nashville Predators team because, quite frankly, in my opinion, and I think you share this opinion, they have left a lot to be desired in the first two games of this season, which is kind of maddening watching this team because you end last season on such a high note going into the playoffs. You're opening the season at home with two games, and how often do we see teams, even if they're not good teams, you know, come out guns a-blazing on home ice in their home opener, and they just look completely out of sync offensively. It is very sloppy. Bad passes everywhere. They're taking bad penalties. I don't know about you, Rob, but I am just very discouraged. And yes, it's just two games, but the eye test through two games has not been good.
Well, it was a total slop fest on Thursday against Seattle. I mean, they couldn't get anything done offensively. And I know, you know, they talked after the game about the third period and they only gave up a shot to Seattle and it was the empty net goal. And I get all that. But, it's one thing to possess the puck. And you would like to possess the puck rather than not possess the puck. But if you're not dangerous offensively with it, you're not really accomplishing all that much. And, you know, I thought the first game especially, you know, they weren't all that dangerous offensively. And then you come out Saturday against Carolina, and they put up 40 shots. And I do think they played a better game Saturday than they did against Seattle. But to your point, like how many times Saturday in the Carolina game did you think to yourself, man, they're really threatening right here? Not very often. Like Johansson made a great play individually to score the goal to make it 1-1. Forsberg scores a late one when you're already down 2 goals after the empty net. They never really felt like they were all that threatening in that game. And quite frankly, I'm not really all that surprised by that. Like we look at the roster heading into this year, and I think the number one thing that I noticed outside of the youth that was on the roster is, all right, well, where are the goals going to come from? And that's been a question we've been asking about this group for a long time now. Like, where are the goals going to come from? And look, like you said, it's two games. There's still 80 games left, but the process by which they're doing things, you know, you can work on that and chip away at it. You know, I think there's only a certain ceiling this team has offensively, and it's not very high. Mm-hmm. And the first couple of games do not encourage me that they're going to all of a sudden be this juggernaut 5-on-5.
Well, I mean, the most urgent they've been is in the last 2 minutes of each game when they've had the goaltender pulled.
Yeah.
And they give up an empty net goal in each game, and then they respond, you know, making things interesting in the last 30 to 40 seconds. But at that point, it's just too late. Like, yeah. That leaves a lot of fans sitting back watching that saying, where was this for the first 58 minutes of the game?
Yeah, and some of it is just decision-making, right? I think the effort is there. I think at times they've been trying to do a little too much, and I think you can get into that habit, especially like opening night when there's all that energy in the building. I thought the first half of that game, they were trying to do way too much, and sometimes the simple play is right in front of you and you just don't make it. Like, you know, Matt Duchene had the puck in the corner one time, and nobody ever talks about plays like this because they don't count as turnovers. But Matt Duchene has the puck along the half wall. He's got Roman Josi right up top. He's 10 feet away from him, wide open with the puck. And instead of just giving him the puck, he tries to rim it around the boards, and there's no one behind the net. Seattle takes the puck, skates out of the zone. It doesn't count as a turnover, but that's what it is. I mean, it's a turnover. You've got established offensive possession, and some of it's just decision-making that they're not doing a very good job of through two games.
Well, Philip Forsberg, I would put at the top of the list with that. Philip Forsberg entering a contract season where you would hope that he would come out at least the start of the season, like we've seen before, where he has started seasons just going bonkers offensively. And, you know, a couple years ago on this very show / podcast was praising his passing and the fact that Philip Forsberg is now putting great passing with his great instincts with the puck on a stick and with the shot.
Yeah.
And there are just errant passes galore from Philip Forsberg. I don't know what's up with him. I mean, there was one play, I believe in the third period Saturday night, where he came streaking down on the left side, and he whipped off a shot where Freddie Anderson had to make a good glove save. That was like the first true scoring chance that I felt like Philip Forsberg had all season, and that was six periods into the year.
Oh, I know. Yep. I felt the same way. And, you know, he does get the goal at the end of the game there. It's a rebound on a shot that gets through from the point. But, you know, by and large, I agree. He's not been all that dangerous through two games. Now, I think you look at the box score, he's going to have 3 points in two games. So you think to yourself, all right, well, he's over a point per game right now. There is another level he's got to get to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know when Philip Forsberg's on his game. And he is, I think, one of the few players on this team, certainly one of the few forwards they have, that are capable of taking a game over when they're on their game. He's not really been anywhere close to that level so far. And quite frankly, with the way the rest of the roster is set up, they need him to be that guy more often than he has been in his career. And through two games, I think he's just been okay. I think what I said earlier about trying to do too much, I think that's been part of his game, and he's got to find a way to balance that. And that's been something that he struggled with throughout his career, of maybe trying to do too much too often. And I think a little bit more of a simple approach to him may serve him well.
Well, one example of the errant passes that comes to mind is literally 5 seconds before Johansson scores on that beautiful backhand that he made. It was a great individual play. The goal was unassisted because Forsberg just throws the puck out of the defensive zone to nobody, goes right to a Carolina guy, and then, you know, the puck finds its way to Johansson. He makes a great play, but that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like, what is going on? So we'll see if Forsberg can correct that. But speaking of the top line, yes, Johansson scored. Yes, Forsberg scored. Both, I would say, on broken plays, not on offensive zone chances where the top line is just buzzing. So how long does John Hines stick with Forsberg, Johansson, and Duchene together? You know, through two games, I think, speaking of leaving a lot to be desired, I would say that trio specifically has left a lot to be desired.
Can you think of a single play so far this year where Matt Duchene's been dangerous offensively? Like, can you think of a single play where he's had a scoring chance?
The best chance that he had was a minute into the game Saturday where he completely just airmailed a point-blank opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it's looked like more of the same so far for Matt Duchene. Now, to answer your question, I said before the season, and I think this would be the way to go about it, I'm leaving them together for 10, 15 games no matter what and just seeing what they have. Because if it doesn't work, well, then you're compounding your issues then at that point. So I don't think I'd pull the plug on them yet. I'm going to leave them together for at least 10 games and see what you have there. I still think those three talent-wise, you look back to the playoffs last year, the way they played in the preseason, there's something there. Now, is it going to be there on a nightly basis? I think we know enough about those three at this point to say no, it's not going to be there on a nightly basis. I would not break them up as of yet. If you get 10 games in and it's still kind of looking like this and the numbers aren't there, then you're going to have to break it up and see if something else works. But quite frankly, if that's the route you're forced to go, I don't really know what you do outside of that because they've tried Duchesne at center. They've tried him on the third line. Neither one of those have worked so far. So if this isn't going to work with Forsberg and Johansson, I don't really know what you do at that point if you're John Hines.
I would go through the end of October.
Yep.
I mean, the end of October is the end of a long stretch of home games. The start of November, you're embarking on a road trip. That could be a point in the season to try something different with your line combinations. But, yeah, the top line, I was expecting more out of them in the first two games. Yeah. Before we completely move on from Saturday's game, I have never seen this before where the Preds were at a 5-on-3 disadvantage and Tanner Janot's penalty expires and the dude in the penalty box is looking up at the clock, almost waiting for the second penalty to expire, and the entire crowd is shouting at him to open the damn door. I have never seen that before. Have you?
I've never seen it before. Now, I have been told that the guy in the penalty box was correct, the time on the scoreboard was incorrect, and that there was a 14-second difference. So I've been told that the guy inside the penalty box was in the right. Then the question becomes, well, why didn't you fix it on the scoreboard?
Yeah.
That's the main question. Okay. I have been told it. Now, the video that Bally Sports put out there of the entire Preds bench going nuts is freaking hilarious. It is awesome. John Hines is losing his mind. Everybody on the box is going crazy. I saw after the play was over, Ekholm skated up to the box and opened the door and was like giving it to the guy. And the guy must have been like, it wasn't my fault. It's not me. I promise. But it was hilarious to watch that take place. Luckily for the Predators, it did not come back to bite them. But I have been told that the guy in the penalty box was in the right.
Well,
take that for what it's worth.
Think of if Carolina scored, whether he was right or wrong.
Oh, I know.
We could have had a Knoxville situation going on in Bridgestone Arena.
Yes.
If the Carolina Hurricanes score at 5-on-3 with the whole crowd, just shouting at the dude and the penalty box to open the damn door, man, that would have been something inside Bridgestone Arena. All right, Dante Fabbro. We have been waiting for Dante Fabbro to take the next step defensively for a while now.
Yep.
And again, we are two games in. I don't want to overreact to two games, but nothing seems to have changed with Dante Fabbro. Making mistakes. He's not dependable defensively for this crew. I don't know if we should really be expecting that next step to be coming anytime soon for 57.
Yeah, it looks like more of the same out there. Now, I will give him credit. He has not made like the glaring, obvious bumble mistake that he's made at times in the past all that often. I can think of one where that first goal that Carolina scored the other day, he was caught up out of position and ends up on a 2-on-1 and they score. So not a great play by Dante Fabbro there. It's just, you hear in the offseason about the work he's put in. He's gotten stronger. He's worked on his skating. All the stock answers that we typically hear all the time. And to your point, through two games, it's looked like more of the same. They did move him around the other day. They put him up with Josi, moved Carrier down with Ekholm, and put Myers with Borowiecki, which, by the way, you want to talk about looking bad through two games? Philip Myers does not look very good through two games. So that may be a potential issue there. But, yeah, I mean, Fabbro at this point, I think it's fair to question if he is ever going to turn into a top four defenseman. I think he's an NHL defenseman. I think you could certainly do worse right now in the third pairing than Dante Fabbro, but that's not what he was drafted to be. And I realize that he's still young, and I've been very patient with Dante Fabbro, probably more patient than most, but you're getting to the point now where you need to start to see something, or you just have to wonder, all right, is he ever going to get to that point and be where he was drafted to be? And so far, he's not really come close to that.
So you mentioned Philip Myers. He was a part of the Ryan Ellis trade, sending Ellis to Philadelphia. Philip Myers comes back in that trade. Part of that trade, too, was sending Nolan Patrick from Philadelphia to Nashville to Vegas in return for Cody Glass coming from Vegas. And I would throw Cody Glass into the long list of names that have left something to be desired in the first two games.
Very
However, I was perplexed yesterday when it was shared on social media that Cody Glass has been sent to the Milwaukee Admirals. Now, the Predators announced this morning that a corresponding move to that one was that Tommy Novak has been called up from Milwaukee, and they have sent Cody Glass to the Milwaukee Admirals. What are they doing? When you combine this with the fact that Philip Tomasino was a healthy scratch Saturday night after playing one game in the National Hockey League, like, Preds fans have been clamoring for the youth movement. And this offseason, it felt like the Predators were actually going to do it, and maybe, obviously, there's still a lot of time to do so. But I don't know what the plan is here. Like, you send Cody Glass down after two games. You scratch Tomasino. These are two pieces of the puzzle moving forward that you need to pan out, especially Tomasino. And I don't understand scratching Tomasino in game two and sending down Glass after game two.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's one of those things where, and look, I get it. Cody Glass has not been good through the first two games. I mean, he's not really been dangerous at all offensively, both on the power play and 5-on-5. You know, I thought Tomasino was pretty average at best in the game against Seattle. He had one big move towards the end where he made a good play. But other than that, not much from Tomasino in that game. But, I mean, get in line. There have been a lot of guys that have looked like that so far. And my thing is this, like, if you're going to commit to the youth movement, and we talked about this heading into the season, you've got to be willing to live with some mistakes and some growing pains. And I don't know what you expect out of Tomasino or Cody Glass, but they're going to have some mistakes and some growing pains. Now, I don't think they've made any glaring mistakes so far either. I just think they've kind of been out there. And look, Cody Glass may not be ready for the NHL. I mean, he wasn't good in Vegas. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to expect that maybe he's just not ready yet. So if that's the case, that's fine. I'm interested if you felt like he was good enough on the opening night roster to be on the power play, to have all these different opportunities. After two games, you've already changed your mind on that? Like, that feels a little quick to me. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with that situation. Tommy Novak coming up, you know, he's a nice player in training camp. I don't know that Tommy Novak is going to have, you know, an NHL ceiling of being anywhere near an impact guy that Cody Glass could have. I'm interested if this also means with Glass down, I would assume that Tomasino is going to play against LA, and I wonder if he's going to play down the middle. Like, I wonder if they're going to give him a shot at center and see if he a little bit more of his playmaking can come out that way. I talked to Tomasino a couple weeks ago. He likes playing at center. That's where he's played most of his life. I think it would be intriguing to see what he can do there. But also, like, if I'm Cody Glass, I'm sitting here looking around and I'm saying, all right, you put me with Philip Tomasino and Nick Cousins, and then the other day you put me with Rocco Grimaldi and Nick Cousins. What really do you want me to do offensively?
Right.
So some perplexing moves on that point, on that time. I'm interested to see how long Cody Glass stays down there, but now it's on him. I mean, he's got to go down to Milwaukee and play well as well to force them to put him back in the conversation. But to your point, two games in seems pretty drastic to make these moves that they've made.
The one concern that I do have with the whole youth movement thing with the Nashville Predators is my concern is that John Hines is going to continue to try to put a lineup out there that he thinks is the best opportunity to win.
Correct.
And that is your job as the head coach. But if he's going to do this at the expense of giving the youth playing time, that's where I would sit back and have an issue with that.
Yeah.
Where, like, let the young guys play. If you win, great. But it's not like you're coming in to this season with this aspiration of winning a Stanley Cup. They do, obviously, within those walls. That's not realistic.
No.
With this team. So that's where I'm sitting there Saturday night, you know, with my dad watching the game asking, where's Tomasino? Like, why is he a scratch? That's why I'm sitting there last night on Twitter when I see this asking Twitter to help me understand this move of Cody Glass going down to Milwaukee. It's
a dangerous game.
And one of the excuses at that time last night was that, oh, well, Matthew Olivier must be ready to come off injured reserve. And my first blush reaction to that was, if this is going to be a true youth movement, Cody Glass should be playing over Matthew Olivier. Now that the corresponding move has been announced this morning, Cody Glass should be playing over Tommy Novak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and think about it also from Poyle's point of view. You know, you just made a trade for Ryan Ellis, and you got back Philip Myers and Cody Glass. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, That's all you got back for Ryan Ellis? And now you're two games in, Philip Myers has not been good. And Cody Glass is in the AHL. I get it. There's 80 games left, and this is more about, especially with Cody Glass, the longer term than it is the short term. How's that trade looking right now? Not looking great.
Not great.
Based on the first two-game sample size.
I believe Ryan Ellis had two assists in his Flyers debut on Friday night.
He did. You know, look, I'm not saying it's the wrong move to trade Ryan Ellis, but, you know, and obviously Cody Glass, there's some time here. And Joe threw out an interesting theory this morning. Maybe just get rid of the number eight. Don't let anybody wear number eight ever again. Kyle Turris, Cody Glass, just get rid of the number eight. There's still time for him to figure it out, but right now, that trade's not looking great.
Speaking of trades that the Preds made this offseason, before we get out of here, Victor Arvidsson traded to the LA Kings. Tomorrow night will be Arvidsson's return to Nashville. Arvidsson spent a lot of great seasons here in Nashville. I'm sure there'll be a nice video tribute for Arvidsson, who spent six full seasons in a Preds uniform, was a draft pick of them, of theirs back in 2014. Arvidsson with 2 points in two games already for the LA Kings. It'll be good to see Victor Arvidsson back in Smashville tomorrow night.
It will be very good to see. You're talking about a fan favorite there, favorite in that locker room, obviously, based on the reaction when he was traded away from Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchene, among others. And, you know, I think you'll also see a pretty motivated Victor Arvidsson. I mean, you know, he's been good so far this year. When he's been healthy, that's been the biggest question mark with him. Can he stay healthy? I mean, I think you can probably bank on at some point this year he'll get hurt, because that's what's happened the last few years with Victor Arvidsson. But my guess is he'll be flying around tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena, and the Predators will have their hands full trying to defend him. So I would expect a nice ovation for Victor Arvidsson. I would expect a cool tribute video, and, you know, interested to see how he does this year with L.A. It would be kind of a tough pill to swallow if you're a Predators fan if he runs off to L.A. and all of a sudden he puts up 32 goals this year for the Kings. That'd be a tough one.
I bet he scores tomorrow night.
He might. He very well might.
I could absolutely see that happening.
Be a all good right. celebration, too.
Robbie Stanley of Robbie and Rex Road, weekday morning, 6 to 10 a.m. here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, as well as NHL.com. Robbie, appreciate the time as always.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for listening to this podcast edition of Preds Insiders. We'll be back with you Monday evening at 6 p.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.